Hey there, welcome to Broadcast to Post. I'm Jeff Sengpiel, CTO at Keycode Media. This is the show where we interview leaders and experts in the AV, broadcast, and post-production spaces. We're giving you the inside tips to grow your media workflows and business today.
Welcome, 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 post-production fanatics. I know you've been alone in your bedroom or your kitchen table, editing remotely, and this is probably the first time you've seen humans in the workspace in person. So welcome, thank you for coming. I'm Mike Cavanaugh, president of Keycode Media. We merged together Advanced Broadcast and Keycode about 3 years ago, and then the pandemic hit. So we're gonna talk about some really compelling workflows that have been occurring since the pandemic, how people have been looking at remote, in-person, hybrid, cloud, what's happening with storage, what are the real tricks to the trade. And this group here that we'll be introducing, Jeff Sengpiel, who's chief technologist of Keycode Media. Prior life, he ran Chainsaw, which posted Game of Thrones, American Idol, and he built that entire facility. Then we have Mark Puzas, he's with Avid Technology, which they've actually come up with amazing integration of an entire editorial system into Teams. They showcased at NAB with Microsoft. And lastly, we have my good friend, Sky Gleason of Clapping Trees Media, and he's basically worked on almost everything you can imagine in Seattle and also in Los Angeles. So without further ado, let's crank it up and let's get it going.
Thanks, Mike. I like starting my own applause. And the fun thing is the live people, they were up front. And then the city government people were a little further back, and the post people have moved even further back, and they're back by the bar. So we've changed the mix here. We all, you know, we're socially distanced because we don't like those people. Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining me here today. Let's jump into it. These questions were written by our marketing department, so I'm going to adapt them as we go. So general questions: hybrid, remote, cloud. Convertible, that's something I like to say, where you're part in the office, part at home. More general questions before we get into the nitty-gritty. Post-production companies and post-production people have been looking for affordable, secure ways to have, you know, sort of collaboration start again and have their teams operate seamlessly in the home and office, kind of a hybrid or convertible workflow. A few other folks are trying to figure out the safest way to get people editing in the office. Some people are all in, and they close the office, and they just said, forget it, we're just going to go all remote. Or they're a one-man band, and they're just staying at the office or staying at home. What are the type of conversations you're having with folks, and ultimately, what are some of the final solutions you're seeing getting deployed? Sky, let's start with you.
Okay, well, I'm coming in as the creative.
Okay.
And when I took the first class there in Burbank on learning how to run an Avid a million years ago, the instructor said, okay, here I am in my shorts, my long hair, and my Birkenstocks, and I sit in a dark room and live other people's lives. If that's the job you want, welcome to editing. 20 years later, here I am, and that's why when COVID hit, it was kind of like, I sit in a dark room and stare at a screen all day. Welcome, come on in, the water's fine. And now we are 2 years later, we're starting to come out of our rooms. And so to the hybrid question, I think editors we're very focused, right? Because we're trying to find that one piece of clip that the client says absolutely must be in the shot, but it was only really in their imagination and it doesn't exist on the frickin' hard drive somewhere, right? Right? It's in their imagination, but it's not logged or listed anywhere. And I think that's where the collaborative opportunity that's coming into existence of the client. Now again, realize as an editor, our job is to create a product. And that's what really confused me. Coming from Los Angeles, my product was a story. It was a 28 minute, 30 second piece of content that had a value that went out to ABC or CBS or Disney or Discovery or something, right? And that's a piece of content. And I got paid well. I come to Seattle and I'm working for Starbucks, I'm working for Boeing, I'm working for Microsoft. They said they cared about story, but what they really care about is selling more Starbucks airplanes and software. So it was very confusing to me to understand that we were using the same language, but the product was different. Our product, my product as an editor, is story. Their product are these hard, tangible things that they make their money on. And so that's where we are now in this, when you say hybrid opportunity, is I want to engage my client that wants to tell their story, which is going to sell on either an idea or a service. And so how do we do that with these new tools of the cloud? Am I tied to a JBOD at the end of the hall? Maybe not. Is Avid the only tool out there? Not anymore. Is it going to make it more efficient for the client that wants to be creative, but as we've all seen, their only real experience of being creative is picking the color of their minivan? So we have a lot of challenges still ahead of us in this storytelling world that we're going to be going through, but I think the barrier continues to get lower. And now with COVID, as I mentioned to Ed, my friend here, everybody is a producer as of Zoom. Everybody is now talent because they've been on Zoom. Everybody is an audio engineer, a camera operator, a makeup person. They're not, but as we just discussed, I don't blame Zoom for Zoom fatigue. I blame bad audio and bad video. And so I don't associate the tool with the condition, just like I don't Avid. It paid my kids' college, it paid my mortgages, but there are now other tools for editorial solutions, so I'm very interested in hearing your solutions. I don't think I answered one of your questions.
You touched on the overall gestalt of where we're all at.
The gestalt, I'm a very zeitgeist kind of guy.
Exactly.
I'm very in the moment, but as an editor, I am now also producing, and so that's why the worlds are continuing to mesh, and I don't get the luxury of just sitting in a dark room and living other people's lives anymore. I have to be in on the capture of it, the upload of it, where does it live, how does it manage? So I'm very interested in how quickly this conversation is changing.
Exactly. And I think...
Quick, I'll keep talking.
I think that's one of the things we can toss to you, Mark. You know, it was mentioned about having other people involved, and it sounds like searching for some of that stuff, that's an asset management kind of thing. What sort of new asset management stuff have you seen or had bring people ask for and bring forward into the marketplace?
I think the thing is everyone has to work from home or they have to work from office and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know where it's going to be and they don't know what they want to do. And then we're finally getting to this realm where people are like, hey, we kind of know what we want. And the answer is 80% of us want some version of a hybrid workflow where they can do their really collaborative things together in an office, but then the stuff they need to do after the collaboration can be done at home. You know, they don't have to travel into work, they don't have to do just any of the commuting, and they can have some quick notes back and forth on how things work. And I think that's where we're really ending up in this world right now. I've found a number of clients completely closing up shop. They'll keep one room that's 100 square feet that has a rack in it, so they have their storage in one place because they want to have centralized storage, and they might run 20, 30, 50, you know, HP Z8 machines there and run Teradici or RGS or whatever it's called these days now that they've all bought each other. And that's been a really good solution for a lot of people because they get to keep things in one centralized location. In the Nexus world, we have something called Nexus Edge, and that's a really fun tool right now. The way I look at it is it's a kind of a web crawler for Nexus. So you don't have to have some crazy database ran media asset management solution. You can have something that knows to look through this whole file system and figure out what it's looking for. And then on top of that, it can build basically sibling files as a proxy to run over to, you know, someone who might be working out of a Starbucks. and they can be doing their work directly from that unit right there and have all the usage case or usage that they would have if they were on site, and they're not dealing with a bunch of relinking and stuff like that going back and forth. So there's a couple different solutions. There's a, you know, third solutions where you can have everything built in the cloud, you know, have full VDI environments. That cloud could be whatever you want it to be. That could be, you know, a cloud that a vendor provides, such as Avid, or a certain Quantum has something similar to that, right? All right, maybe not. he's shaking his head. He's lying.
A few folks upstairs have something.
Yeah, they've got some options like that as well. And the cost delta is what changes a lot of people. But I think people are starting to realize, especially IT and media and entertainment, is that the cloud is nothing more than some nebulous idea, pun intended, that, you know, the storage is somewhere else that people don't have to manage it. And I think the biggest thing we need to think about from a post-production perspective is how do we keep creatives creative and not having to think about how to do their job? If we can remove the barriers of technology and make the technology work for the editor, everything gets a lot easier in the world, right? Let's keep your brain going in the direction it's going. And it's a cost-benefit analysis. You know, if you do everything in the cloud, it's roughly the cost of renting an edit bay. You know, I mean, $600-$700 a week, you know, it can be more expensive than that. You know, you'll find some solutions that are cheaper. Purchasing storage is not a venture that is necessarily inexpensive for most people, right? It's something they're really gonna think about. Now people are doing a storage as a service, right? As a subscription. I mean, that's just something that, you know, I'm finding is kind of crazy, right? You purchase storage at a lower price, but then you're utilizing a subscription base to pay for the file system. And whatever, when I look with a client and work with them, my question is, how do we keep your people doing what they love? They don't want to be thinking about how to work on it. And so the one thing I found very interesting in the pandemic is a blessing in this manner, is it's trained tech people to not just say, hey, come in the office and work here. That's the only thing we know how to do. It's trained them to go, oh, we need to catch up with the real IT world. And I hate to say it like that, but you know, real IT, or M&E is probably 7 to 10 years behind real IT. They always have been because they have harder workflows to deal with. The word workflow doesn't even exist in the IT world, right? It's something we came up with here and it stuck and it's fun, but now they're forced to understand what needs to happen, how it needs to work, what people really need to get done, right? So if you do something on Teradici, you only get 2.1 audio. All right, well, that's a problem. How do we work around that if you're doing audio, right? Or maybe color's not completely perfect and we need to figure that out. So that's where that hybrid portion comes in too. And I really do think that people have missed the actual interaction. I always say that you get a lot more done with a 5-minute coffee with someone than a 2-hour Zoom call. And so that 1 or 2 days people might want to meet in the office to collaborate in a boardroom, or boardroom's the wrong term, but you know, in a break room or whatnot, is more valuable than people expect, so.
Those hallway conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't have those at home. Well, we do have them at home. I have them with my dog to get out of the way, or you know, telling my kid the garbage has got to go out. He's 30, but he still needs to take the garbage out. And one of the interesting things there about cloud is other people's computers and other people's storage. So if I have a computer and storage that I would let you work on, I'm going to want someone to pay for that. I need to make sure that, you know, A, it's paid for, and B, I'm making a little something there. So it becomes a question at the end.
Don't get greedy. You're not allowed to make profit.
And that's what's going to happen. So the thing there is discovering, okay, does it make sense for me to own this thing and depreciate it over 3 years? Or does it make sense for me to use this for, you know, 12 weeks and then shut down shop because I don't need to have my shop? It allows me to pop up and pop down in no time flat. And if that makes sense for me, yeah. But if I'm operating 24/7 in the cloud, that may not be the best cost, you know, cost analysis.
And there's a lot of other pieces of that too. If you put in storage in your facility, right, most of us have been able to get away with having some sort of storage in a closet with like a cooler on top of it to cool it down, and they haven't really got a properly built facility for running 24/7, yep. Especially when you have, you know, 5 to 50 editors remotely doing things. So you have to have network connections to be thinking about, you know, for upload, you have to have power, you have to have cooling, you have to have someone who set it up initially, and also some hands there sometime when something explodes. I promise you something's gonna break. It's not if, it's when. And so that's those things you mitigate by going directly to the cloud, right? If you already have some sort of a facility, you might want to take advantage of that.
So That gets us to the first part of the workflow, as we've coined and made our IT friends available to use. The first part is the production people who all took off. They shot it, and now they want us to fix it in post. But it's on camera cards. It's you know, sometimes it's still on XDCAM discs. How do we get that into the system? How do we ingest? And you know, where are we ingesting? Is it to the cloud? Is it to the on-prem stuff? Or maybe it's both, proxy into one spot. Scott, you want to take a jump on that?
Well, I'm working with a client in Austin in June, and they only want archival. And my question was, what are we shooting on? Well, we're shooting on Blackmagic. Okay, 4K, what are we ingesting at? And again, we're still making those choices, but the client isn't clear on what they're going to end up using it at. And again, with other corporate clients in San Francisco, we went ahead and shot 4K because we could. And the files weren't that heavy comparatively, and we were able to store them locally. But then the client said, okay, then we'll just transfer them on Google Drive. Yeah, exactly. And I said, you'll get them when your children graduate college. And consequently, making those hard choices now that the cloud is available to us, but again, the throughput is still the challenge, isn't it? And could we FedEx a thumb drive, which are now terabytes of size? And again, you and I come from the days of a terabyte is massive. Well, a terabyte, you know, is like...
fits in your pocket now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very also interested in this Lucid Link concept and Frame.io, as where is that the next iteration of from camera to editorial, bypassing a lot of this hardware that we used to have to use, but we also used to have to use tape, and we also used to have to use physical film before that. Mm-hmm. So what is this next iteration of this conversation?
And that's the thing that gets interesting there, because when you look at the Frame.io methodology, and it, you know, it's owned by our friends at Adobe.
Explain, I'm sure people...
Sure, Frame.io is a media management platform. They also have a camera to cloud system they have set up. Now, their idea is that you go into the cloud and you don't come out. I mean, that's the whole thing, because it's the iterations where, oh, I've done this up here and now I need to come down, now I need to go up. I've paid for egress, I've paid for ingest. I'm moving data around in the cloud, which can get a little pricey. So their idea is, hey, let's stream your proxy directly to the cloud. The proxy is now there. Those are the rushes back from the film days, or the dailies back from the tape days, where you've made the conversions. We've got that data in the cloud. People can start working on that now. So now we slow boat the big files, and we find somewhere that's the best place to get that uploaded. So it could be a data center. And the fun thing is, in today's day and age, your house can be a data center. It depends on your speed of your connection and what you've got running in your house. Once that's all up there, it can then take the place of that media that you've already put the proxy up there. It creates its own proxy, which is continued to be used for editorial. So then let's take what's in Frame, we'll take it out and go back into the cloud and turn it into a Lucid instance, and now I've got creative editorial working in the cloud. Or, you know, in some cases, a future-looking statement, there could be a shared storage system in the cloud that will stream that out in the same kind of methods. So you've got this data up there, and at the end of it, you just need a sequence. You've got your AAF, you've got your XML, and you're going to conform that back to your original material. So there's ways to do that in the cloud today. Color gets a little difficult, because you've got other considerations you got to take care of. And audio gets a little difficult at the end, if you're, you know, doing 7.1, but we've got methods we can do to take care of that.
And that's the challenge with the whole Apple issue now. We've got Atmos and Dolby in these little devices now that are giving better audio and video than any other, you know, bigger solution. I mean, bigger screen.
Yep.
But there's something there into this conversation of quality as well, that Apple is really smashing forward, as Apple can do with the money that it has.
Exactly. And one of the things there, if I have an iPad Pro and I'm streaming a color session to it, I can view this in HDR. I can watch a Dolby PQ review session for color on my iPad Pro. And I've got a Zoom link on this window over here, and I'm talking to the colorist about what's going on. And the tools are all there. It's just a question of whether or not they make the most sense financially for what folks are doing.
Well, it's also the expectation of and the training of the wetware, i.e. your client. I don't know what I'm doing. You tell me what I'm supposed to be doing, and then it's up to me to train you. This is what we're doing. And I've been doing it the old way. I've invested heavily in this other way. I'm probably going to keep doing it that way, but I'm still trying. I'm trying to unlearn faster than I'm learning now. And that's where, as I said, Avid made my mortgage for a lot of years, and it might in the future. But right now, Adobe's how I'm making a living. Apple is a tool that has great resources and availability to me. So these are the challenges of how to I unlearn, but it still serve creating that product that we talked about earlier for my client and what is the need there.
Exactly. And the fun thing is, the other fun thing is, I mean, if you are dealing with let's take it out and put it into a Lucid environment, that can be MXF Media, and I can cut that with Media Composer as well. Or I can put that onto an on-prem storage because, hey, I've made mezzanine files in the cloud because I can put my transcoding up there now too. So if I'm doing a documentary where I'm shooting 1,000:1, I don't know about that. That's going to be an extremely expensive adventure in terms of transcoding costs, in terms of storage costs. And I've got, 999 times more data up there than I'm going to use at the end. So it also depends upon what exactly it is you're doing and what sort of things you need to have access to. So if we've got it on-prem, that gets into the whole concept of shared storage. And we got a number of Avids here with shared storage, and we got some other friends here with shared storage upstairs today. Glasses. This is what happens when you work in post. Now, how do you make sense of your assets? How do you organize that for edit teams and make the most of your media? How is cloud importing shared storage going to work in managing of your files? And how are customers going to evolve these environments as the amount of media grows? I'll give that to you, Mark.
Yeah. Man, that's an easy question.
Yes.
I mean, the hard part about this is that everyone has a way they do things and a preference of how they want to do things. Yeah. So I know that, people who know me in this room will know that I didn't come to Avid as some guy who just died loving Avid and bled purple. And, I live in Seattle, right? So we have to understand that, Adobe's here and there's a lot of other things that go around this, and everyone has their own way of doing things. One of the things that's really nice about the communities in Portland and Seattle is that you've got a really nice knit group of people who have a passionate way of how they want to do things, and they're really independent creators. A lot of them don't have super collaborative environments, right? So it doesn't make sense for them to have a Media Composer shop where they need to have everything in a perfect environment and everything has one specific media type they use so everything can transport down the line. In LA it's a whole different story, so we deal with this all the time. But saying all that is to say that every time you guys want to think about how am I going to manage data, you need to think, how do I want to manage data? What have I been doing and what works for my people? And if you can't define that, you'll never make it to where you want to go. We as Avid, and I think probably everyone up here, could give you a couple mildly decent ideas of how to do it or where we've seen it done before. But if you have someone who's in stop motion, they're going to want to do something different than someone who's in sports media. I just promise you that. Someone's going to want to do it in one way and another way. So getting those things fluid going up and down to the cloud is honestly almost impossible unless you hit this perfect world. Now that's going to change. It's going to change rapidly because it has to. But I think a few things we're going to have is as I said, we have some tools that are basically like web crawlers for your storage. We have other tools that are like CatDV that Quantum has. They have full database integrations on how they want to do things, but the first thing they're going to ask you is, what do you want to know and how do you want to store your data? If you're not meta tagging things, if you're not having ways to look up things, it's not going to make any sense however you control it. You know, so we have some tools that are different than other people's, like phonetic searching. So if, let's say you're running a church and you know a pastor said something on one day and you can type in that and it'll find it and boom, all of a sudden you found that one clip, one pastor said whatever. And that's a phenomenal tool, but it is by no means a media asset management tool, right? So we don't want to look at it that way. And I think people confuse all these little tools as stuff that's going to help them over life. And one thing I want to add to about the remote workflows is, I don't know, how many of you are familiar with SRT? Simple, reliable transport, right? An easy way to move video over, right? You know, people who are having SRT in their editor and being able to have kind of that over-shoulder workflow with people that are 10, 20, 2,000 miles away is something that was kind of unheard of, what, 18 months ago, if not 12, if not 8?
Yeah.
I mean, so that in and of itself is a game changer for more of a smaller group of people that are working together and can work collaboratively that way as well. And so when we look at cloud, management is hard, to be very blunt, and it is going to get easier. But it also depends. Every single asset management tool you look at, I would highly advise everyone to have a set idea of what you want, and I mean a very set idea of what you want, and don't just listen to whomever, what any reseller or vendor tells you. Ignore that. Listen to what they're saying, but find the one asset management tool that is 95 to 99 to 100% to what you want, because the customization will double, triple, or quadruple the price of it and make it so you don't want to use it or upgrade it. That's my best piece of advice for asset management.
Exactly. And the other thing is, I have yet to have someone walk up to me and go, say, Jeff, you know, that asset management thing we bought, it was the best thing ever. I'd like another four. No one likes their asset management, because I've got to go through and I've got to do the work to put the metadata in there to make sure that everybody knows what... I've got to do a lot of work now for some benefit later. And, you know, we're human beings. We're not geared that way. So people always, you know, they don't put anything into their asset management system other than raw data. And then when they can't search it later, they're upset that it doesn't function. No, it functions fine. You just didn't give it anything to search on.
Some people look at folder management, folder like design management as like asset management, and that's great. In fact, I have some people that won't even go away from their folder design, how they like the tree set up, and that's great. I would say that policy, as much as that's a four-letter word in the creative community, and it should be, listen here, work with me here. You know, policy sounds like it's crazy, but people need to think about that when they're ingesting data. What do we need to have from the content we're bringing in now to make sure we can find it later? And that needs to be something that's a top-down effect, and make sure that people know that even if it's a folder management style or if it's asset management, you know, what are we going to put in here for metadata so we don't just have a bunch of used storage that we don't know how to access? You know, there's only two types of storage on the planet, new and full. And so we want to make sure that we keep them, you know, somewhere in that realm where you can use it.
There's a third type. It's on the shelf.
Oh, on the shelf. Yeah. Sneaker net.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing also you need to take into consideration is, okay, how's this going to be paid for? I'm not asking about where's the money coming from. I work for an organization that has sold cloud storage to the same cloud storage provider. I work for an organization that has sold LTO tape other cloud storage service providers because it made sense for their financial model. That's the thing you also need to take into consideration. Yes, cloud is shiny, but sometimes you just can't get it figured out to pay for it that way. So there is definitely a bunch of options that are out there that you don't have to go with the ultimate. And a lot of times the other piece there is, and coming from someone who's had a CFO walk up to them because of cloud charges on my Amex and say, we need your Amex, we're gonna take it away now. You need to have a discussion with the finance people, because the cool thing about cloud is there's so much cool stuff up there. I can do sentiment analysis. I wanna see where Mark is upset.
And as we're talking about all these magical, mythical, you know, red pill, blue pill, or green pill, whatever, we keep looking for this single solution. And I remember hearing, it's not a silver bullet, it's silver buckshot. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's multiple solutions, but at some point, as an editor, it's your job to know where that media is. Now, outside of, if your product is the story, you maybe have the option or the luxury of an assistant editor that helps organize and pre-do that. I've worked in that industry. It's awesome. Doesn't happen up in Seattle, though, very often. So the editor is the one that, so to have your software scrub the metadata for me and do that script search concept is kind of magical, because at some point, especially in the corporate world, we need that VP telling us about that thing. And you know it's somewhere in the digits, in the bucket, but to be able to find it, that's a real, it used to be I'd have to go through and watch the whole thing and make little notes. I use Timmy a lot. Right now, Timmy is a transcription software in the cloud, but again, it's several processes in, and that's a way of letting my clients somewhere in the world preview a piece of transcribed media and make notes right inside of it, and that helps me do a paper edit. And so I don't know if there's other solutions that Avid has, but that's a, are you familiar with Timmy? T-E-T-I-M-I? Yeah, and it just got bought by the bigger transcription software company that you throw a piece of media up into their server, and it transcribes the whole thing, gives you a Word doc, and then you can do a search, and it, again, also locks into the time code. So that's a pretty handy tool there.
And the other thing also is, you know, does your transcription engine understand what is being fed into it? So if someone is speaking in very clean, punctual, you know, Midwestern English, yeah, that's fine. But if you get a guy with a Cockney accent interviewing a cop from Brooklyn, what is that going to look like on the transcript? And you know, we had a big piece.
And humans can touch it for a whole lot more money. But there are, the AI is pretty darn good now, as long as you accept that it's not going to be
not 100%
accurate. Yeah, and that, for 10 cents a minute versus $3 a minute, which is what AI is available now to us, which it didn't used to be.
Exactly. But let's get back to the nuts and bolts. So everybody in post has a bay. It's a room, or maybe it's a laptop. You're working anywhere. So the creative suite, the finishing suite, what are we seeing those look like today? Monitors, how is it being fed? How's this all working out? Speakers.
That's a good question.
It is.
Honestly, I don't get to see a whole ton of it. I wish I had some better information than that. But realistically, at the end of the day, you know, if people are doing something like a Teradici, they're able to run three monitors on Teradici now, which is awesome. And so they'll end up running that over as needed. Obviously, as I said, you can use SRT along with that, at least through Media Composer you can. So that's an option to go out to other people. The monitors get a little interesting because of color, right? When you start getting into some specific things there, you know, I'm not 100% familiar with how good Teradici is with color. I know they're pixel perfect when it comes to most set stuff, but I'm not a colorist. I don't even play one on TV. I didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Like, I have no room to talk about that. Sorry, that was...
So one fun little thing is the monitors, the source and record monitors in your favorite editorial application, they're 8-bit. The video playing on your GUI is 8-bit. It always will be. You still need to have advanced hardware or an SRT out to then be received by a color accurate monitor to see something better than 8-bit. So if you've got a delivery that's coming along and they say, well, we need this to be, you know, it's going to need to be 10-bit, we're going to have to take a look at this, you're going to need better tools. And if you need to hear more than 2.1, you're going to need better tools. Yeah. So it's possible to have those same tools still in your house with the data somewhere else and it being fed to you, and you're playing it back in real time. That's Edge, that's Lucid. Or it might be might be the idea that, hey, we've done the consolidate. If you're a cloud shop, we've done the consolidate and we've now grabbed that media and brought that down for finishing. but I don't have 1,000 to 1. I have handles, 15 frame handles on each side of my clip in case I need to do a little bit editorial. So there's different ways. We got a question out there.
While you're on the topic, you mentioned earlier about monitoring HDR coloring sessions on an iPad. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Sure. The iPad Pro has the ability to display PQ. So if you have a system that can generate, that can take in a 12-bit signal and turn that into a stream that can be picked up by an iPad Pro, you will be able to see and monitor that session in the same way. Streambox has that capability. I believe SRT will end up having that same capability. It's a question of whether or not the hardware itself that is inside the machine, or the software engine inside the machine, sometimes in the case of Streambox, they've got a plug-in for Composer and for Premiere that can spit that out. So you can see that at a greater bit depth. You also can receive that on a receiver and HDMI into, you know, a Sony HX 310 monitor and a full 7.1 setup. So there's ways to make this happen still and still have the ability, even though you're editing remotely. So the difficulty there becomes sync. So my Teradici or my Z Central setup versus my full screen, there's got to be, I have to have a little bit of tolerance for it being off. And normally this is a finishing process where it's not, you know, that kind of, I'm not working and trying to cut on the beat like a music video, which would never work in that sort of environment. But I'm able to get that sort of level of performance to me and to others. So that can be bounced off of a cloud repeater and sent to multiple people around the country.
And from a high-end solution, I worked with Roush Coloring Facility there in Burbank, and we were experimenting when HDR just was starting, and this is 4 years ago, and we were looking into, and I think Keith went ahead and did, Keith Roush, a colorist, and he was able to pair a system that would then ship to you, and you were watching over almost a private VPN, almost connecting, and in coloring, you were able to watch because he spidered it and put the color system on it, and he was able to, wherever he was in the world to wherever you were in the world, get a reasonable experience of this is what the color is going to look like on your biggest file. And I'd love, especially, I didn't know your heritage. You and I have friends from yes. Chainsaw Days and Mike Forrest. But anyway, why is delivering at the highest quality necessary at that Chainsaw Hollywood level? Why is that important? Because right now we're doing a lot of stuff in H.264 mm-hmm. as the capture. Well, and we're trying to color it.
So to quote a gentleman from Netflix, we need our content delivered at the deepest possible bit rate and the highest possible frame rate and the highest possible quality because we intend for it to live to the heat death of the universe. They intend for it to be...
And this goes back to that product that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You are creating a product that has a sellable value.
It has a sellable value, and it's got a document that says what I need to deliver.
The original NFT.
Yes. So it is the original material. They're going to take it, and they're going to down-convert it, and they're going to turn it into other things. They're going to set it up for delivery. I'm kicking out an IMF at the end of the day that basically they're going to add Portuguese, they're going to add Spanish, they're going to add French, they're going to add all this stuff, captioning and audio, and basically they end up with a playlist. Oh, you want it in English? Play these. You want it in Spanish? Play these. This video, this subtitle, this audio, off it goes. And that's the thing there is, at no time have the delivery requirements really lessened in broadcast. They've only gotten more and more intense.
Yeah, I'm glad you narrowed it down to broadcast. But with the advent of YouTube, everybody with an iPhone is a production company.
Correct. And at the same time, though, YouTube Originals...
I didn't say quality production yes. company or quality product. I'm just saying every 13-year-old with an iPhone...
You can. And that's the thing. And that came up earlier in a session. With everybody, the democratization of all these tools, how are you going to delineate this. At the same time, we're still the folks that have always done this, and we know how to do this, and we know how to sell a product, and we know how to tell a story, and a lot of other folks don't. So let me see, is there anything else? Review and approval.
The view and approval is a challenge, isn't it? Because we used to have to send out VHS tapes. We used to then would send them a QuickTime they'd have to download. That would inevitably, the gamma wouldn't be right on a Windows machine that it was on an Apple machine. And that's the heritage that we're still struggling with. And that's where Frame.io has kind of listened into that, mm-hmm. because they, and even Dropbox, say what you will about Dropbox, but that opportunity of having the client have a very low barrier to entry and something they know how to do, you know, two clicks and or I think I should be able, you know, able to type something here or circle that. And those tools are now available to us for remote clients, for remote review steps and processes. And it is it's a subject, we're in a subjective thing. Our tolerances are, you know, purple is not the same purple, is it? And yeah, his is blue.
He's kind of gray.
And there we go. But when they say the word blue, any one of these could kind of fit into that. So we're trying to get to the blue that our client is expecting. And that maybe takes iteration, even though think in their brain, blue is blue is blue. No, it's not, but they don't want to play that game. So to have that Frame.io concept, and what do I mean by Frame.io? What is that tool?
Well, the tool there is I can actually send a clip up for review out of an editorial application, and people can be reviewing it in real time. And oh, look, I just got a comment on that part of the timeline. There's now a marker there that says I'd like this to be 15 frames funnier. So I guess I need to do this. I'm going to make these changes. And that's the whole thing. The tools have gotten to the point where, despite the fact that a lot of people are distributed, we can still be collaborative in terms of review because they can be involved with the process without having to be on the couch behind me eating pistachios, making a mess. Exactly. Review and approval?
I don't think I'm allowed to say anything, but well, I know that someone who doesn't work for Avid might be able to say some stuff.
There are ways to do review and approval with Avid and
collaboration
and the Media Central editorial management product that's out there. There's also Teams integration.
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk
about
that.
Anybody could do today with the NDI tool set. So you can take NDI and bring it into Teams. So NDI is going to be 8-bit. But if I need that to be a higher quality, I mean, what if that was SRT?
Well, they now integrate not just the app, but the actual timeline, the bins, where that actual media composer becomes a participant for Teams. And it allows you to see the entire, it's almost like looking over the shoulder of the editor. So it's pretty slick. It was shown in Microsoft booth.
In the West
I just didn't know it was public yet. Sorry.
Yes. You know, this is shown in the Microsoft booth. It's SRT. It's not released yet, but SRT into Teams, they've got an integration where the bot
this
pops
is why
up.
I come to these events.
Yep.
So that
will be coming down the pike. If you could code it yourself, you probably could do it today. I could do it today with NDI. I can give you a rough view. It's going to be an 8-bit. I can also take NDI out of a editing system and put it directly.
AVR6, 8-bit is whatever. That's gold.
It's gold. So you can actually have a Zoom participant be my media composer output feed, and someone could be watching that. A whole team could be watching that, and you could get everyone's opinion on what you've done, which is just always the best thing ever.
It's perfect. Yeah, everyone more opinions. Yeah.
All right.
More
opinions are always good. So let's skip the opinions. Any last minute questions before we have to wrap it up? Because I think they're cleaning up upstairs.
Oh, they're bad with us.
Go ahead.
I have a less a tech question, more of like a macro editing question, which is I was years, there are so many systems, and your thoughts on if editors should be fluent in multiple systems, if there is an industry standard that, like, you think, or if really think out of that much.
When I was in college, I learned creative editorial on an RM450 made by Sony with a pair of 3/4-inch decks. Finishing was done on a BVM 310.
At least.
That was the thing. Those tools aren't in existence anymore. I needed to learn how to interact with people and to tell a story. The tools aren't as important as the ability to tell the story. Knowing a tool set, is it going to allow me to get a certain kind of job? Yes. If I know multiple tool sets, does that leave me more flexible in the future? Yes. But at the end of the day, if I'm a creative person and I can tell a story, if I'm a finishing editor, and pardon my French, I can polish a turd, then I'm going to have work. And knowing how to do that in multiple tool sets, whether it's standard or metric, that's going to be just a better thing for me. Because in 5-10 years, the tools are going to be different. It's the nature of the beast. It always changes.
I'll add my 2 cents. I always say if I never sell a copy of Media Composer, I won't care. There's nothing wrong with the program. I just know where I live and I know what people use. That world is changing quickly. What I mean by that is our location does not dictate who we work for anymore.
Yep.
So I advise a lot of schools, Arizona State University's new film school, we've got a lot going on with them right now. A number of education centers are building stuff around Avid protocols, and I caution them, listen, you're going to put Avid on a wall 20 feet long and 8 feet high. You want our logos, and they're great. Please make sure you teach them Premiere. Please make sure you teach them Resolve. They need to learn everything. They need to learn the nuances between them. And the reason is not that one tool is necessarily better than the other. They're a little different from each other. One's like a manual transmission, which might, you know, be able to do something a little bit different than the other one's a little bit more like an automatic transmission, and one's maybe like a magician. I have no idea. I'm not an editor, but what I do know is that you'll get paid more working on Avid because most of the places that have Media Composer are paying higher. And now that you guys are able to work remotely and say Montana, Colorado, Utah, and use Media Composer, I mean working directly for LA, I would take the money.
The lead assistant.
I am. I need more people in my territory. Come on.
The lead assistant editor for American Idol, which has been in LA for decades, now lives outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Sure.
He moved back there because his wife got a gig, and he's still doing the same work. So he's got an Avid out there, and he's because they're all Avid, and he's making it happen.
So I I made a living because I knew how to, in Los Angeles, Univision, at the beginning of Avid, because they paid me to drive an Avid bus. Now, I moved outside of Los, and then I took that over to NBC and a Disney, and because they had, and it was, again, Mike that was selling those systems to the broadcast and network communities, and they needed somebody to drive those buses, and they were all Avids. Moved to Seattle, not so much. It became a premier town because it was, again, back to the product was not the content. We were selling the product with the story. The story wasn't the content. So, to your point, yes, learn everything you can. I've got LumaTouch on my iPad. It's pretty awesome. And it'll do everything my Premiere will do and my Resolve will do. It's just a weird interface because you're touching the screen, and I come from the day when you didn't do that. But learn, as you already have, story, and then understand how are you going to make a living. It might be you have to drive a Chevy and you're a Ford person. It's just transportation.
And at the end of the day,
that's not a yes or no answer, is it?
And at the end of the day, it is, you know, we're about telling the story, and we're here because we like post-production. We're not here, you know, to make a mint and to do all this other stuff. You know, we love what we do. Otherwise, we'd have found something outside in the sun to do.
More lucrative.
And,
we've got it. We're getting the hook.
We're getting the hook. So, Mark, Sky, thank you for joining me today. Everyone, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, guys.
And please come on up afterwards. And I have a feeling this microphone's about to get... Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.